This is a sneak peek of Salt and the Sovereign, Part 1, Chapter 1, read by A.L. Knorr. This is not a professional recording, so please forgive any mistakes. Chapter 1. Everyone called my mother Polly. It was a name for sweet young girls, kind old ladies with knitting nestled in their laps, or clever feathered pets from tropical countries. I remember thinking from a very young age how much the name did not suit the imposing character and visage of Polly Grant. At 6 feet tall and with eyes so dark they appeared black, my mother was difficult to miss in a crowd. When she spoke, her words came out with an authority that convinced all those within hearing range she was a woman not to be tested. She wore her long dark hair in a high circular braid, like a crown, which only added to the air of austere royalty about her. Standing on the platform at King's Cross Station in London, she did not hold my hand, but instead rested her own heavy one on my shoulder. The suffocating weight and the heat of it made me feel like I was being slowly crushed into the concrete. I wanted to push her hand off and take a deep breath, but I dared not. Polly was swift to quell rebellious behavior. A short, elderly man in a black bowler stood a few feet away and to the right of me. Holding a newspaper in his hands, his face was not visible behind the pages, just gray tufts of hair curling out from under the brim of his hat. I stared at him, waiting for him to move the newspaper so I could see what he looked like. Waiting for trains was boring. I was 5. Looking up at my mother was like looking up at a giant. She was gazing off to the left, still as stone, her eyes trained on the tracks in the direction our train would arrive from. Her hand seemed to grow heavier by the moment. Sending my right foot out to the side, I slowly moved away from my mother, just enough to begin to slide out from under her oppressive grasp. "Do not wander, Belle," she said quietly, not looking down at me. But she dropped her hand, and that was all I wanted. I took a deep inhale, relieved. "No, Mama." Reaching into the pocket of my wool coat, I produced a piece of crinkled paper, just putting this wrapper in the bin. She cast me a brief glance but didn't reply and returned to her sentinel stance. I had learned to keep little bits of trash in my pockets for just this reason, small planned escapes of the kind only children reveled in. Stepping back and turning, I scanned the station for garbage receptacle. There were only a few passengers on the platform, since it was just after lunch on a weekday. I spotted the bin and made my way over, walking slowly and quietly, because only unruly children ran and screamed on train platforms and on roads and in the parks. Savoring my bit of freedom, I took my time, tossed the wrapper, and watched it fall. When I returned to the platform, I made sure Polly could see where I was, but I didn't return to her side right away. I stood to the side a little, watching the old man reading the paper. Some sixth sense told him he was being watched. His gaze finally dropped to the little girl in the blue woolen coat. Me. I was impressed with his thick white mustache. The mustache was curled up at the ends like a small set of horns. We made eye contact. His mustache lifted and his pink cheeks rounded. The corners of his eyes crinkled. I smiled too, drawn to his sparkling eyes and kind expression. The full-grown human male was captivating to me since I'd interacted with so few of them. Not very many people looked at me the way he was looking at me, like he really saw me. Polly drew all attention to herself, and I didn't mind. Sometimes I felt like a small insect, flying low to the ground, busy and invisible. The old man glanced at my mother and back at me. "You must have gotten your eyes from your father," he said. "So blue, like the sky, or a tropical sea." I didn't know what to say to this. My father was not part of my life, and I had no memories of him. I knew other children had fathers, of course, but Polly, as she liked to remind me, was enough parent to fulfill both the role of both. I had never questioned the source of my eye color before that moment. The idea of getting some feature of mine from my father had never occurred to me. It was true, my eyes were very different from my mother's. We had the same dark hair, the same white skin, and we were both slender, but her eyes were dark and round, while mine were bright and tilted up a little at the outer corners. That my eyes were different from my mother's had never before been pointed out to me, and it was a moment that changed something. It was a moment of growing up, of questioning, of realization. One's features were inherited, not given randomly as if by magic, but bequeathed. "Where are you going?" the kind man asked, and I liked his voice. He It was gentle and soft, and he asked me this question as though he knew that if he said it too loudly, it would alert Polly and our interaction would be over. "To the seaside," I said, just as quietly. "Where are you going?" "Belle," my mother said sharply, looking over. She snapped her gloved fingers and pointed at the ground beside her. Slowly, a little sheepishly, I walked over to my place, and my eyes shuddered as the weight of her hand descended on my shoulder once again. The stranger watched this, his eyes on my face. Somehow, he knew better than to answer my question, but he watched until my mother's gaze turned away from him, returning to the tracks. A whistle sounded in the distance. I watched as the old man released one hand from the newspaper, reached into his jacket pocket, and pulled out a slip of paper. He held it between two fingers so I could see his train ticket, the letters spelled Cornwall on the billet. He winked and his mustache lifted again. "Two," he mouthed. I never saw the man again, but he'd given me something to ponder. Sometime later, as the train chugged its way across the rolling green moorlands, I was given a sandwich from Polly's bag. After I'd eaten it, she took the kerchief it had been wrapped in, scattered the crumbs on the floor of the carriage, and put it back in her bag. She'd eaten as well and seemed relaxed, even relieved. It was a good moment, as good a moment as I was going to get. "Mama, why do we have different eyes?" "Because you were born that way," she replied quickly. I went back to staring out at the passing green, disappointed. But this was the best I was likely to get from Polly. It was not important for children to know why. That privilege was reserved for adults only, and I supposed that one day, when I got older, I would understand a lot more, too. We arrived in Brighton to gray skies and drizzle. Stepping down from the train, I took as deep a breath of the sea air as I could hold in my little lungs. The salty, humid air of the coast thrilled me to my very core. Though I knew better than to ask what we were doing here, I knew it had something to do with the ocean and something to do with a recent event in my life that Polly referred to as my salt earth. Only a few weeks earlier, Polly had taken me to a place outside of London called All Hallows. It was an overnight trip, like the ones before it, and always to the same empty beach. I knew what to expect. Mama and I were to go swimming in the ocean together, under the cover of darkness and away from the gas lamps of civilization. During these swims, Polly would lie in the shallow water of the beach watching me play. I delighted in the way the water felt on my skin and the sand felt beneath my feet and between my toes. She simply watched me, calmly, patiently, and without explanation. At All Hallows, I expected the same sort of delightful evening swim. These little outings had become my favorite thing, and though Polly never told me when she planned one for us, they became frequent. I learned that there was never a night swim that far away. But something different happened at All Hallows last time. I transformed. Though the transformation felt right and even good, I was frightened by what was happening to me. Polly had never shown me her true nature, so I didn't understand my own. But when she saw the way the muscle bones of my legs were knitting together, the way the skin was changing to scales, she slid over in the water. "Just relax, Belle," she whispered. "You're becoming what you were born to be." It was then that she transformed beside me, allowing me to understand that this was normal, and this was what she'd been waiting for all along.